My name is Bill Nash. I was called up in 1945 and sent to Palestine in, as a young officer, 1946, August, just after the King David explosion, I think it was. And I was stationed in Jerusalem. Beautiful climate, lovely place. But the terrorist organization were just beginning to start up there to get rid of us and get the mandate taken away, or us to give up the mandate, rather. And it wasn't a nice country, but it wasn't a pleasant time because we were largely confined to camp because of the terrorist activities. Wasn't much one could do about it. But it's something, as a national serviceman, one had to bear. And I didn't leave it until after they handed over. They gave up the mandate. England gave up the mandate in, I think it was 47, 48, and we stayed on with one brigade in Haifa to get all our stores out while the United Nations ran the rest of the country and the war started.
So why were you in your garrison rather than out there stopping the terrorists, the Israeli terrorists?
I don't think it's anything you can go out to deal with. You have to wait until things happen, generally, or do searches all the time and keep troops off the roads and keep them in barracks, because they're not targets then. If the more they're out, the more they're exposed they are. Unless you're on a definite operation where you're looking, you have information and intelligence that are the terrorists in a certain place. It's very difficult. This was particularly difficult. These people are very clever, and the nation was behind them because they just lost 6 million in Europe, and they felt that they were entitled to have this little spot in the Mediterranean, and we shouldn't be interfering with it. Unfortunately, the mandate was ours, and we had to see that fair play between Arabs and Jews took place, and that we couldn't support either side. We didn't certainly want to go against the Arabs because they had the oil, and we couldn't do anything about the Jews, because they just had this dreadful experience in Europe.
So what was there a sort of balance then of a bit of Arab terrorism and a bit of Jewish terrorism?
No, the Arab terrorism had taken place before the war. This was after the war, and it was all, and these people were all trained by all the terrorists. Most of them had been trained by the armed forces, either British or the Americans, in the war. So they were experienced people, and they were very able and intelligent.
You mentioned at the start the King David Hotel. Can you tell us about that? Because that's, I think, one of the best-known attacks.
Yes, that was the first big thing that happened. I mean, it was just starting then, and security was very lax in the hotel, and a handful of them just came and went into the basement and placed a bomb there and set it off. It was a very easy job to do. They were surprised. And that started off, and then from then on it was rather much tighter. I was stationed in Jerusalem just after that, and I'd been to the officers' club down in town Jerusalem. I was living in Allenby Barracks, and I thought the officers' club would be a very nice place to live. There was a beautiful Jewish girl there on the reception, and I thought this could be very pleasant, so I planned to move in on the Friday. On the Thursday it was blown up, and I was on the court of inquiry. And it's quite amazing, the people that escaped, people standing on the first floor above the bomb, two officers talking, and the explosion went between them, and they were both deafened, but perfectly all right, whereas people sleeping on the second floor were killed. And two officers on the roof who were sunbathing came down with the roof and just walked off the ruins, and perfectly, not a scratch on them. But the poor Jewish girl, I mean, there was a picture of her being carried out in a stretcher with her head off, and two soldiers who were carrying her were vomiting to one side. It's appalling business.
So that was which attack again?
That was on the officers' club after the King David. But it was going on all the time after that. It was just a constant thing.
Wasn't there really an attempt, though, by the British to make sure that there was some form of power sharing between the Jewish and the Arabs?
It wasn't a question. I don't think there was any problem about that. I think the Jews were being quite sensible in that respect. They said, look, if we get this, you'll have the same vote as anybody else to the Arabs resident there. They'd been living side by side for a couple of thousand years with no problems. The problem started when the political wing of the Jewish people, the Zionists, decided that they wanted a state of their own, and they decided on that spot. That's what, and of course you get the people whipped up. I mean, if you were Jewish, of course, having had what you've had in Europe, we can't go on like we were. We have to have our own country to defend our interests. And this was the site selected for historic reasons. And so they were dedicated to it, and nothing we could do about it. They said to the Arabs, we would give you one vote each, but the Arabs decided no, they didn't want that. Because what I used to say to the servants in the mess and so on, you know, well, you chaps would go along with this. I didn't know much about it, only 19. But I said, they've done wonders in the parts of the country that they're occupying. It was green, they were growing fertile land, they were growing oranges, it was becoming little bits of prosperity. And I said, well, you go along with these people, you'll do very well. They said, no, British, leave Palestine, all Jews dead 1 week, and they'd just cross their throats, you know. I said, what could you do? Madness on both sides. But
So tell us about when the British finally pulled out. Can you describe that?
Well, that went very quietly. We just, all our stores were pushed into Haifa, the port there, and we kept one brigade there. And it took us about a month to clear it. We took an interest in us then, because we were out of it. We were no longer running the country, and we just had this little port. And neither side took an interest on us, but there was still a little bit of trouble between them, and the Jews notified the brigade commander at one stage that they were going to clear the old city, part of the city, out the next morning, because they'd been having trouble with them. And so the brigade commander had to make a quick decision as to what to do, try and get in between or what. But we decided it was futile, so we left it. And by 6:30 the next morning, they were all gone, floating out to sea in little boats. And it was quiet after that. They blew a flour mill up after that, and they were walking around looking as if they just dumped out of a sack of flour like ghosts for about a week. But after that, there was nothing much of interest. The odd shot fired, but nothing.
Now, a lot of people are talking about wanting some sort of political renewal here in Britain. Do you feel that as well, or is that do you think not necessary?
I think we need a complete renewal. I think democracy is getting a bit rickety. There's no most businesses and in other areas of our existence are being, you know, new innovations are coming in, new ideas. But in politics and running a democracy, there seems to be nothing doing. Same old thing, tax, spend. We really need to start having a new view of the whole thing. It's very difficult. I find that I don't vote because there's no political party has anything that I want in their manifestos. I mean, this is three parties here. None of them have. If they had about four or five things that I want, I would go out and vote. But they don't, and they get away with it. I don't think anybody would vote for uncontrolled immigration, which we have now. I don't think anybody wants any immigration. We're up to 60 billion, and I've always said I think 35 is the ideal number of people to be living here, the reasonable standard of living. It's a very uncomfortable existence. The roads are clogged. There's queues for so much. Everything's overcrowded. And there's so many people here who seem to be starting to be unfriendly towards us.
What about any other things other than immigration as an issue which you think would actually excite people and get them to vote for one of the three existing political parties or else some other political party?
I think that there should be a cap on spending by any government. I think if we ran the place as we did Hong Kong from 1950 until when it was a refugee camp of 3 million people with no raw materials, no coal, no oil, nothing. We had to import our vegetables. Even our water had to be imported. And a small administration, reasonably efficient, reasonably incorrupt, brought it inside of 40 years in the 1990s when I left and when the Chinese took over, into the 12th greatest trading nation in the world. Not city, but great trading nation in the world. America first and so on. Now, the reason for that was that they had a man called Cowperthwaite, who was our financial secretary, Sir John Cowperthwaite, who set up a system of taxation and running the economy that was 15% corporations tax, 16% personal income tax, no tax on dividends, no capital gains tax, inheritance tax, nothing really, nothing else that, and no statistics to come out from government because they said they would be manipulated by government if they had them. And by God, on that simple basis, we went to the 12th greatest trading nation in the world inside 40-odd years. What would I'd like to see is that, talking about the controlling expenditure, is that if they want to bring taxation above 15 or 16%, they should have a referendum among the people and get a 75% vote. We agree, you have to tax it because of the war or some other emergency. But other than that, they have no way of increasing expenditure or increasing taxation so that you can elect a bunch of chimpanzees into power, and you don't have to worry about it. Your money's not going to be taken away from you, or your house is not going to be overtaxed, or this, that, and the other. You don't have to worry about what they do. Now they're interfering in every facet of our lives.